Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus, honoring personal legacies in the circle of life. They believe that every detail counts and every memory matters. Piasecki Althaus is located in Kenosha on 39th Avenue, serving the community since 1931.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by John Nicholson, a retired Racine Unified administrator, Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconser, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, and Chuck Wolbers, a transition and work experience teacher in the special education department at Tremper High School, also in Kenosha. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for Education Matters on WGTDHD, Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin, at 91.1 on your FM dial, and 101.7 in Elkhorn, and 103.3 in Lake Geneva. WGTD is a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Network. It has been over a year since I've had Kathy Dunkerson as my guest on Education Matters, so I'm pleased to welcome her to our WGTD studios today. Kathy is the Director of Extended Learning for the Racine Unified School District, and I visited her in her office a week ago. And I could barely get in the door for all the boxes piled outside with materials for summer of 2015 programs. I must say I was impressed. Welcome, Kathy Dunkerson, to Education Matters today, and thank you for taking your time to share with our listeners information about the before and after school programs that are available in Racine Unified. Kathy is a Racine native and has been in this position for some 14 years, so she has excellent understanding of Racine as a community and the Racine Unified School District. Kathy, you once defined yourself as an elementary student as the principal of the after-school programs at his school. So get us started today, Kathy. Would you provide our listeners an overview of your position, and then we'll get into the wonderful details.
Good morning, Dwayne. Thank you for having me here.
My pleasure.
My description to the young man that asked me, you know, what did I do after school, the best way I could think of to describe that for him was to say I was the principal for after school, because after all elementary children understand what the principal does. You know, they're the person that oversees things. So I guess that was my best analogy for him.
Oh, that's great.
I started in this program 14 years ago as an assistant director for community engagement, and then about a year and a half into that, I became the director of the program. And basically, my role is to support academic achievement for both youth and families in the buildings that we have our programs. We work in partnership with the building principal and the staff in the building to identify needs that that school may have. When we work with community partners to try to fill that need and gap. And then we also, you know, hire teachers and other educational individuals who can then provide that programming at the various levels.
So you really have a very broad area of responsibility, in fact, for the whole school district. And then you have to know personnel, and you have to know possible programs and you know, people in the community who can carry these things out and all that sort of thing.
I guess you could say that.
No wonder you're such a busy person. So let's talk about your help after school, your homework help after school and before school for kids, because that's kind of what got you started in this, isn't that right?
Yes, it is. I mean, our programs are designed two components to it, I guess I would say. We are half of our programs, and we currently have 23 before and or after school programs. Half of those programs are grant funded, means we receive funding from the Department of Education's 21st Century Community Learning Center grants, and that focuses on helping students' academic achievement.
Yes.
And social and emotional learning, that's a big piece of it.
That's a new piece too, isn't it? The social and emotional part?
It is. We know that has to take place in order for the academics to take place.
Right.
And then the other half of our programs is funded by the school district, because years ago they committed to provide continued funding to sustain the programs that might lose grant funding. So it's been a wonderful partnership to ensure that we have not lost any schools or program sites. In fact, we continue to grow our program. But what we offer in the various programs, first of all, we have a model that serves our elementary schools. It's called Lighted Schoolhouse, and those programs offer homework assistance, academic tutoring in reading and math if a child should need it, and we look at a child's grades, MAP assessments, and we can talk about that.
So the people who do that have access to this information.
Yes.
So they can focus right on what the student's needs are.
Individual learning for that child.
There you go.
And then we offer something called academic enrichment, and what that means is there are fun classes. They could be anything from cooking to recreational sports to musicals, plays, choir, band, just a variety of enrichment classes that enrich a child's academic and help support that.
Wonderful.
And then at the middle school level, we have in a high school level, our programs are called After Zones. And those are more of a focus on clubs because students at that age level really identify more with club activity than just a class, so to speak. But again, a variety of options for them to, you know, choose what they would like to participate in. But again, the focus is on those students that are enrolled and registered in our programs. All of them receive academic support.
All
of them.
Everybody gets that. And, of course, that's the basics of it all. Okay.
Correct.
And in terms of enrichment programs, you mentioned to me the other day that there's Boy Scouts and chess, and we were just talking with Greg Berg about music kinds of activities. Tell our listeners about Boy Scouts, for instance.
The Boy Scout program has been a partnership with us for, I want to say, at least 7, maybe 8 years. They come into our schools, and they provide scouting experience in a non-traditional setting for the most part.
Okay.
You know, if you're familiar with Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, there's different age levels that a child will progress through for that. But what they do in our program is they'll take, for example, boys in grades kindergarten through fifth grade, and they will be in one scout club.
Okay.
And then they modify what they do based on that age range. And it's been a wonderful opportunity for the boys in our program. They love the scouting program. It teaches them some skills that we don't necessarily teach as, you know, from an educator's perspective.
Right.
They really work on some of those soft skills for children, life skills.
Yes.
And so they've been a wonderful partnership for us to provide some additional type programming.
Do you have Girl Scouts too then?
We do. We have Girl Scouts in a few of our schools. We have, depending on the school and the year, the scouting programs come to me and say, we have this to offer. Where could we put these programs
at?
And that's kind of how we place programs from the community in our schools is, you know, we look at what is needed out there and what is their capacity to provide the services because they're free of charge. You know, they're programs that come in and provide these services, and it's not a cost to us or to families to participate.
Okay, the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, there's no cost then to the kids to participate in those?
No cost whatsoever.
They don't have to join the Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts? Or
actually, the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts have built into their own funding base, like scholarships for the youth that participate in our programs that they sign up. Then the parents don't have to pay for the membership.
Okay, and so this then gives kids an opportunity to do things that they might not otherwise have an opportunity to participate in.
Absolutely, we try to make our program free for the most part.
Yes.
But if there is a charge for children to participate at the maximum level, it's $10 a week.
Okay.
And so a child could be in our elementary program for 14 hours a week, and the family's paying $10 a week for them to participate. So,
okay.
But we try for the most part to make it free.
And that's certainly very reasonable child care then, even at $10 a week.
Absolutely.
Okay. Also, you have chess and so on. And you also talked about programs that are there isn't enough time for them in the school day, and so then they go into the after-school program.
Exactly. A big focus this year is we are working on science, technology, engineering, and math,
okay.
Or STEM, as it is known these days. That is those program, the STEM program, the acronym for it, is really getting children engaged in hands-on learning experiences and experiential learning experiences that they would not necessarily have an opportunity to do for during the day. So, for example, we have at our middle school level, we have robotics classes. We have engineering programs.
Okay.
We at Gilmore Middle School this year, we just completed a NASA STEM challenge where they designed a group of youth designed how you would grow vegetables in space with zero gravity.
Oh, my.
And they had to videotape it, and we submitted it to NASA. We will see if they are one of the final competitors. If so, those kids get to go to Washington, D.C., and meet with NASA individuals. And I mean, so those are some of the things that we try to bring in, you know, just something you don't do during the day, but it really is exciting for kids to participate.
Right, and it brings out the kind of the educational kinds of skills and knowledge and so forth that they need, but in a fun way.
We like to say that we embed academics, reading, literacy, math, in every one of the classes that we offer. So
right.
If a child was only participating in academic enrichment, they are still receiving literacy, reading, and math content to
right.
help improve those skills as well.
Now, you were telling me when I talked to you last week about a class that you taught at Starbucks with Terry Tessman and so forth, and it was under computers or something like that, but what was it about?
Well, I didn't actually teach it, but Terry did.
Okay.
Terry is our new STEM coordinator for
okay.
the school district. I think her and I both have a love for STEM because we hit it off right away. She came to me and said, we just received this grant from Verizon and the Department of Education where they were going to provide Starbucks Middle School with 30 tablets, computer tablets,
okay.
and the software that would teach children introduction to computer science. And basically what that was for us this year was we were teaching children how to program apps on smartphones.
Okay.
That's really something that students might learn by the time they get into high school,
yes.
but we're pushing it down to the middle school because I know what child nowadays doesn't seem to have a smartphone or someone they know has
well,
a smartphone.
Also, then all the technology skills that they can get in school will help them then as they move on into their careers or into higher education.
Oh, absolutely. And again, that class was part of the STEM program.
Yes.
So, you know, teaching them technology and the whole aspect of engineering and application on a computer.
Wonderful. And so this is how you were working with Terry Tessman then and promoting STEM in your programs. What about, say, now this fall? I assume that this will be ongoing, and will it be expanding and that sort of thing?
It is. We're looking to make that class available at all five of the middle school programs that we have.
Okay.
So youth at, you know, our five middle schools can participate in not only an app, you know, an application class for building apps, but more engineering classes using curriculum that, you know, is hands-on, engaging in that capacity. We're also looking at developing a lot more with partnerships. So, for example, one of the things that we're looking at this year is a partnership with Battenfield for an aviations club.
Oh, really?
Where these students would have classes once or twice a week learning about aviation, and then one Saturday a month they go to Battenfield and they will fly in an airplane. They will fly an airplane. They will
okay.
teach them how to, you know, literally fly an airplane. That's just awesome for kids. You know, could you imagine?
Well, I would say.
I said I wanted to sign up for that class.
There you go. Exactly. Maybe.
I could learn how to fly.
Exactly. That would be wonderful.
But that's, you know, my summer months are spent working with community agencies to find those interesting courses that would bring something extra
to
a child's
learning. So maybe
we
should say something to our listeners here. If you have an idea for Kathy in terms of a program for Racine Unified kids, how can they contact you?
You can call our office. The number is 262-664-6990 and ask to speak to me, Kathy Dunkerson. I'd love to hear from people out in the community if they have ideas that can help enhance and support student learning. That's really what we're about.
And why don't you give them your email, too, so they can email you just in case they would like to do that.
Thanks for that suggestion, Dwayne.
There you go.
My email address is kathy.dunkerson, D-U-N-K-E-R-S-O-N, at RUSD.org.
And Kathy is with a K.
Correct.
There you go. Okay. So now then, our listeners then, if you have some ideas then for Kathy, you can bounce them off of her by contacting her by phone or by email. Let's talk about before school programs, too. You do have some before school programs, like at Julian Thomas and all the middle schools.
We have at our elementary sites, and actually in the fall we will have one additional. So at elementary sites we have morning programs. I mean, usually they're about an hour before the school day starts. So Julian Thomas, Red Apple Elementary, Jefferson Lighthouse.
Daycare.
They're still the enrichment classes.
Okay.
So they're still.
It's beyond daycare, then.
Correct. Beyond daycare. Daycare is a wonderful thing. Families need that. But because of the funding we receive, we build a comprehensive program that puts a little more emphasis on academic support.
Right.
But in a fun way.
Yes.
New in the fall, we will have a morning program at Case High School, if you can believe that. They start school at 7 o'clock, but they want to have a morning program from like 6:15 until 7 a.m. for a morning program at Case. So the high school will have one, and then all five middle schools have a morning program.
So that's kind of an experiment to see if what are you going to have in that 6:15 a.m. program?
Actually, we're supporting
exercises.
Exactly. That's what we are going to be doing, strength and conditioning, maybe some yoga classes, some dance classes. We know that the brain actually functions better when the body is physically active.
Okay.
And so the thought was those students start school so early in the morning, 7 a.m., that if we could, for some of them, getting them in there to do some morning programming. We'll also have like a study center there in the morning, so students who might need some extra support with any of their academic content, English, math, social studies, or science, we would have a teacher there in the morning that could help them with that as well for 45 minutes. Or, hey, I need to go in and use the computer lab because I don't have a computer at home and I have to finish some assignments. So
those will be open. The computer labs will be open for the kids at 6:15.
Correct.
Oh, that's
and that's what we do at our middle schools as well. Computer labs are open in the morning. Some physical exercise type programming. We started that with the middle schools because they actually start a little later, and that gave us an opportunity to have them come in from like 7:15 until 8:30 to again make sure they're finishing their homework. They've got to turn in an assignment, and maybe they didn't have the resources at home to do it.
And all of this, too, kind of helps parents out who need daycare and that sort of thing or care for their kids before school or after school types of things.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I've always said to anyone who's asked about, you know, what is this program? And I explain, we're not child care program,
right,
but we care for children. And so, yes, it's absolutely helping working parents. From the National Association, they will tell you that having programs that support working families,
yes,
that also helps children do better in school, because if a parent isn't stressed out about what do I have to do with my child every day, then they have time to actually do things with their children in the evening that is more supportive of, you know, enriching that child's life with reading and things like that. So we definitely are there as a support program for parents who need that care before and after school.
Okay, I want to skip down to this question about, tell our listeners about the impact of these programs on students and student learning. What do the data show?
Well, we haven't analyzed this year's data, but I can tell you from years past that we know that when children attend a specific number of days, and we gauge that at if they are participating with us for 45 or more days,
During their
school year, and that program operates from September until the end of May, that if they are there at least 45 days and at least an hour a day getting some kind of academic support, you will see an increase, and we measure reading and math skills.
Yes.
We, using MAP, which is Measures of Academic Progress. It's a computer-based system that allows our children take it in Unified three times a year. So we use that as a gauge, how are we doing with the students. And we can see that those children, 90% of them will meet their growth target, meaning they start here, you know, somewhere at the beginning of September. This is what their MAPS test says. MAP says they should reach a certain point by spring in May. the students that attend these before and after school programs with that academic support meet their growth target and exceed
90% of the students.
Many of them, and I don't even have a specific percentage, but I can tell you just from observation over the years, many of them greatly exceed their growth target, especially children who are struggling with learning and their MAP score might be low. They can grow 30 or 40 RIT points, which is just outstanding. I mean, we're getting them basically what that MAP score is telling you by spring. What we want them to be is on grade level task.
Yes.
So if we have a child that's not at grade level at the beginning of the year and we can get them to grade level at the end of the year,
wonderful.
Then these programs are doing what they were intended to do.
I'm just thinking now, and this is something we didn't talk about before, but the idea, so busing, I mean, kids who are on the bus, how does that work, or can they participate in these programs?
Several of our programs have transportation home. We provide busing home at the end of the program.
Okay.
Currently, five of our schools have transportation home. So that means they don't necessarily have to have transportation by bus in the morning, but maybe a parent can't pick them up at 5:30 at night for whatever reason.
Yes.
We have transportation home that drops them off really close to their house, so that those children can participate. Our grants tell us, one of the requirements and guidelines for our grant-funded programs are, there cannot be a barrier for participation.
So then you are required then to accommodate these students.
Yes, and we have to make every reasonable accommodation for them. And so this past year we had five elementary schools that had bus transportation. Four of our middle schools have bus transportation home, and the high school had an additional bus outside of their activity buses for taking students home. So we try to make that happen for youth because we do realize parents are out there working, and maybe they just could not be there at, say the program ends
exactly.
at 5:30. Parent couldn't be there by 5:30 to pick them up, but they could be home by 6 o'clock. If we put that child on a bus, mom and child are going to meet up at home at the same time.
Okay. Let's talk about, so how do parents find out about these programs that are available for the students in their schools then?
Several ways. We do various types of marketing for the program. Through the schools that are offering the program, we have information available during the summertime at the program, or at the, parents are at the schools in the summertime. We also do some marketing during sixth grade orientation at our middle schools. That's always in August.
Okay, so every parent has access to sixth grade orientation.
Correct, and they have to come and bring their child in, so then the information is available there about the program. We staff every open house night, every site we have staff at the open house.
Okay.
Again, that's a one-on-one conversation for parents to ask more specifics, and that usually generates a lot of enrollment at that
yes.
time. We have information out on the district's website. We have our own website. We do, marketing in the newspaper.
Well, you had an ad in the paper, this past Tuesday?
I had one in yesterday, too,
yes,
about
yeah.
summer school.
So
we do get the information out there, and through our community partners as well. We put information out, at the community centers. And
yes.
Anywhere that you would think that families would go and be able to pick up information, we try to have our brochures and then information about. This year we will have brochures for each individual school, so a parent will specifically know what kind of classes are being offered there. That and word of mouth, I will honestly say, because we've been in the district for 14 years,
yes.
that parents know about the program.
Yes.
At least if they've been within the district, they know about the program.
Yes.
For those new families coming into the community, we want to make sure. So our enrollment center also has information about us. So.
Okay, let's move on to, you're also involved in grant writing in order to fund a lot of these programs. And the other day you told me about a grant proposal with UW-Milwaukee to the National Institute of Justice for a program dealing with mental health, some wraparound services. Talk about grant writing and this Milwaukee program.
Okay. As I stated before, half of our programs are funded through grants. Currently, those schools are funded through the 21st Century Community Learning Center funds that come out of the Department of Education by way of the Department of Public Instruction here in Wisconsin. Those are yearly grant renewals. So there's 12 grants I write a year for them to keep those programs going. We've had a funding from the City of Racine Community Development Block Grant that has funded, partially funded our mentoring program that we will talk about a little later.
Oh, City of Racine then.
City of Racine. And then we do, on occasion, or whenever we can, write for both foundation and federal grants. This grant that you mentioned, the National Institute of Justice grant, is a grant for keeping schools and communities safe. It's a research grant, so we partnered with UW-Milwaukee. They will be the research partner. In fact, they will be the lead on this grant. If we receive it, they actually will receive the grant, and then we will partner with them to put the programs in place that need to be there to help support a variety of aspects. What this program entails is we would be offering a program called the Violence-Free Zones at three of our middle schools.
Okay.
And really what it is it is a mentoring program at the heart of it. But the staff are there all day long during the school day.
Ah.
They help with conflict in the building, issues that might arise from some mental health issues with children. You know, children who experience trauma.
Bullying, is that?
Bullying, that's another piece of, you know, that's that in a sense, bullying really does affect how a child's state of mind is when they're in school. So these individuals that we have in the school will provide support throughout the school day and before school and after school and within those communities where those children live. So that is that basic wraparound service. It's 24/7, so to speak, to make sure we're providing support and helping those students who are at risk.
Okay, that really, and that's so in tune with the times in terms of concern for mental health.
I think so. It's becoming, you know, mental health is becoming a more prevalent topic and something that we have to look at considering, you know, what we are seeing happening with youth in our community. When someone thinks of mental health, I think they get the wrong picture. It's like someone who's, you know, for lack of a better word, just cannot really function. But mental health has so many varying degrees of how it affects, you know, us. If you're depressed, that is a mental health issue, and depression can affect youth. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize that depression among, you know, elementary, middle, and high school youth is on the rise. And so,
and this, in a sense, this program then is a service that public schools can provide but that other schools cannot provide because of this kind of program.
Right. You know, and the grant that we're applying for is we're stating that if you implemented this type of program, the results are we expect that, you know, we will have a decrease in all of the negative things that affect children.
Right. Okay. And another program that you told me about the other day was the First Book Organization. Tell our listeners about that, because books are such keys to children's learning.
We started partnering with the National Book Organization is a nonprofit organization from operated out of Washington, D.C., that provides books to nonprofit agencies or programs that serve more than 40% of their population, serving children who are free and reduced lunch or, you know, low-income children. And so the program itself offers various distributions of books across the nation, from when publishers have overruns or they have extra supplies and stocks of books, the publishers give the First Book Organization the books for free. And then they put the listing out so you can go online and find books that are specific to what you would like for your program from a list of, you know, titles. The only thing that an organization pays for is the shipping of the books from wherever the book distribution is to your location. So currently this year, it's 65 cents to ship a book from, let's just say, if they were in California and I wanted to ship them to Wisconsin. And it could be a book that's valued at $50, but it's 65 cents just for the shipping. Now, if they have a local distribution, which they did last summer out of Milwaukee, we drove up and got them for completely for free.
Uh-huh.
And our intent is that all of the children that participate in our after-school programs receive 4 books a year. We're building home libraries for these children.
Yes.
Because we want them to read. Reading is essential for learning. So by providing families with home libraries, then our hope is that these children are then reading these books, reading older siblings, reading to younger siblings.
Yes.
But literacy is in the home.
Wonderful. Okay. And there's research, too, that shows that kids who have literature then to read over the summer then don't have that summer slump that many kids have then as a result of being out of school.
You're absolutely right. So one of the things we just did was before our programs ended on May 21st, and one of the things we did was we made sure that each child went home with 2 books for the summer.
Okay. So that fits right in.
Sure that they have those resources even when they're not in school.
Wonderful. Okay. And so that is another dimension then of your program. Talk about the Adults Mentoring Children program.
We have a program under my office that's called RUSD Mentoring. We mentor youth from 4th through 8th grade, and we will be expanding that this year as well. But currently the program has been in operation for about 3 years. It started with a partnership with University of Wisconsin Parkside. They had received a grant from the Department of Juvenile Justice to work with at-risk kids. What we've done since that partnership was established was how could we connect with people in the community, volunteers, who would be willing to mentor a youth for 1 hour a week in a school-based setting, means they didn't have to go pick the child up and take them somewhere. They come into the school, and they can sit and talk to the youth about their goals, you know, what do they want to do when they get in high school, when they get in college, hopefully. They can help them with homework if that's a comfort zone for the volunteer.
Okay.
We train our volunteers with the program. Currently, I said it's 4th through 8th grade. We have some wonderful partnerships for our program. Our biggest volunteer base is currently coming from the City of Racine Police Department.
My.
We have between 30 and 35 police officers who come into our schools and 1 hour a week and are able to, you know, mentor that child. We ask that our volunteers commit to at least one school year because we know also that a consistent mentoring relationship will build
yes.
those skills with children. But we also partner with, we have individuals from the community as well. I mean, just volunteers,
right.
retired teachers, retired business people, college students, you know, when you just forget a name, you can't think of the city district attorney's office.
That was
the one I was currently the Mount Pleasant Police Department, and we're in conversations with the fire department so that we can. One of the aspects of the partnerships with the police, fire, especially the police departments, was. A lot of the children that we have in our mentoring program are children who are, and we don't like to use the word at risk, but they might have not had the best community upbringing.
Experiences,
things happen in their community, may happen in their home. They have had negative experiences with the police department. This is a way to change that negative perception of what the police department does with
Wonderful.
Our youth. So. Yes, we're really proud of that partnership and how that's, you know, the chief of police, Art Howell, has been so supportive of that program. And we can't just thank our officers and all of our volunteers enough for what they do. And we're continuing to look for volunteers. So
okay.
if anyone is interested in mentoring a youth, like I said, currently 4th through 8th grade, they can contact our office, and again, that number is 262-664-6990. They could ask to speak to Dave Power, or they could just simply mention, I would like information about your mentoring program, and they would then be connected with Dave. He is our mentoring coordinator, and we're always looking for volunteers.
That's wonderful. At this point, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Dwayne Olson, and you're listening to Education Matters on WGTD HD at 91.1 on your radio dial from Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Today, I'm visiting with Kathy Dunkerson, Director of Extended Learning for the Racine Unified School District. Our program has focused on the before and after school programs available in Racine Unified, ranging from help with homework, enrichment, and daycare. Now back to our program. So is there anything else you want to add? I'm glad that you added that point about if people are interested then in mentoring and working in this program, that they should contact you in your office and you would set them up.
We currently have a waiting list of students who are waiting for a mentor.
So you got the word out there.
So we would like to see if we can get some additional volunteers to help these students out.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about financing your programs. How are your programs financed? I think you mentioned half by grants.
Correct. Currently, with our 23 locations, we are funded through 21st Century CLC funds. Those are grant-funded programs. The grants come, they're either a $50,000 grant or a $100,000 grant.
Okay.
It depends on the cycle of at which we're in at the present time. So we currently have four schools that have $100,000 a year funding, and then we have 12 schools that are on $50,000 a year funding. And then we receive money from the school district. We are a district program. They help support this program because I believe they feel it's of value to our youth and families. We receive enough money to compensate when our grants are decreasing. The district is helping offset that. It takes really for a really well-run program to operate from September through May and then some summer school programming. It takes about $75,000 a year to service a school that serves at least 150 children a year.
Okay.
So really it's a pretty cost-efficient program, I must say. We do, compared to national statistics, it costs about $500 per child for a full year of programming.
Okay.
With our program nationally, they will tell you it's about $2,000.
Okay.
So in that respect, we think we manage resources really well, but that's because we partner with a lot of people to bring in their resources and not just our dollars.
Right. And so then they help fund the programs by bringing their resources in.
One of the free resources, obviously, we get is from the National School Lunch Program. We provide snacks for students after school.
Okay, tell our listeners about that, too, because that, I mean, I would want a snack after school, too.
You know, the National School Lunch Program provides where we can give children a healthy snack after school, string cheese, 100% juice. So they get a little snack to carry them over until they go home for dinner, because most of the children are in our programs until 5:30, even
yes.
6 o'clock. So that holds them over until they can go home. The district actually does the processing of this for the program. We order the snacks through our food service provider. The district gets reimbursed from the federal government for the snacks that we distribute.
Okay.
If we had to pay for this service out of the funding that we receive, it would easily cost $50,000 to $60,000 a year because of the sheer number of children
yes.
that we are feeding.
Right.
So we don't have to take that out of the money that we are allocated, those hard dollars. It comes via another grant, actually, federal funding through the National School Program.
So not only do you program, you balance finances as well.
I think I do that quite a bit.
there you go. That's really wonderful. And what a return then for our kids and our community. So I want to get down to this question that I wrote out for you about if Racine Unified were to receive a $20,000 grant to purchase additional extended learning programs for the coming school year, what would you choose if the decision were solely up to you? I want to hear what you would do.
I like that question, Dwayne. But first of all, I have to tell you, nothing is ever solely up to me because I don't believe in making decisions by myself.
No.
Everything is a team and a collaboration and a partnership.
Right.
However, if we had that extra funding, I really look at what is the need that we have most and where could that impact the most.
Uh-huh.
Right now, our big focus is on our middle schools.
Okay.
because that seems to be that lost time for kids. In our community, there are a lot of programs for younger children, elementary age children.
Okay.
And there's a lot of things for our high school students
right.
to do. But our middle school kids, the 6th through 8th graders, there's not much in Racine for them to participate in, really.
Yeah.
Sports activities, but outside of sports activities, there is not a lot of other things that they could do. So I'd look at what could we offer that could enhance that learning for them. And this would not mean necessarily keeping it housed in one of our school-based locations. I personally believe that we need to put more programming out in our community centers so that children come home from school and can go to a community center and get the same type of services that we provide at our school-based programs.
Okay.
So we're working in partnership with the City of Racine Community Centers and the Brace Center to increase what they can offer for children at those sites after school in the way of homework help and academic support. So I'd say if we had that extra $20,000, I would put it there because that's the need I see.
Okay, the middle school programs then are the ones that are in need these days.
I think so.
And I like the idea that you're talking about working, that you work with the community centers, because that's something I wasn't aware of.
It's we have over the years, you know, it's kind of been on up and down cycles, but we're really in full swing this year to have some additional programming at the community centers. Like, for example, this year we've been partnering with the John Bryant Community Center, helping with their choir program and some other activities there. We're looking at putting a partnership together for the Tyler Domer Center next
okay.
to Park High School that would focus on middle and high school students for career and college exploration.
Ah.
Working on those soft skills that youth need to get that you know, work into the workforce. We partner with the Brace Center to provide after-school mentoring and some recreational sports there, but the mentoring is a key piece.
Yep.
And what I like about this is the kids feel comfortable going to these community centers because they live in that neighborhood.
Okay.
And again, it gets to be an issue that there's no barrier for their participation.
Right.
So for those children who do take the transportation home or a city bus, and maybe we do not have transportation from that particular school, then they could go to one of the community centers and participate in some high-quality program.
And then will that information be in the brochures that you put out then for this fall? So parents will know about that?
Yes, it will.
Okay, well, that's really great. So let's talk just a little bit about who staffs your programs. We sort of mentioned that, but let's talk
okay,
about it a little
sure.
more specifically.
Currently, and this has been a pattern over the years, approximately 70% of our staff are certified teachers,
okay.
meaning they are a elementary certified, K through 8 certified, or they are secondary certified, meaning 6 through 12.
Okay.
Approximately 20% of our staff are educational assistants. These are individuals who work in our schools as educational aides. They could be hall monitors.
Okay.
These are the staff that they work with the children, and we use a lot of the educational assistants and staff to do those what I would call our enrichment classes, and not only but like mentoring and the homework help and soft skills classes as
okay.
well, that building those relationships with kids. And then about 10% of our staff are what I would call youth workers, people who like to work with youth. They live in our community. They may have background experience, say, for example, working at the YMCA or the community centers or
Boy Scouts, whatever.
College students. They all
yes.
fit into that category. And that makes up our staffing.
So to our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as I visited with Kathy Dunkerson, Director of Extended Learning for the Racine Unified School District. Our program focused on the before and after school programs available in Racine Unified, ranging from help with homework, enrichment, and daycare. Thank you, Kathy, for this most informative program. We wish you well in this most important aspect of programming in the Racine Unified School District. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for another edition of Education Matters. This is your host, Dwayne Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org.
I have often walked down this street before, but the pavement always stayed beneath my feet before.
24/7 jazz on WGTD HD2. Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more, airing right now on HD2.